One day in Athens, Socrates and Plato and their friends, they were visiting about being married. Socrates said to his young followers, "By all means, marry someone. And if you get a good spouse, you will become very, very happy. And if not, you will become a philosopher. And that is good for everyone. So by all means, marry." Roughly 50% of current marriages end in divorce. There must be many philosophers among us already. I find that our experiences of marriage differ, and that most everyone that I meet has a story to tell. Everyone has their own mountaintops and valleys when it comes to marriage. Everyone is a philosopher in their own right. A marriage that lasts a lifetime, a marriage that represents the eternal marriage between Christ and the church, that remains the vision for the majority of Christian believers throughout the world. Some 1900 years, 2 millennia of experience standing beneath this standard. And what this 1900-year tradition tells us is that the marriage journey is not always easy. There will be difficulty. To the degree that the best of what is inside of us will be tested. Otherwise, why would we frame our marriages with taking vows at an altar, publicly, before the body of believers? You know, in fact, when I meet with young couples, they're so excited, and many of them have lived and traveled to beautiful places where they would like to be married. I always encourage them to find a consecrated place, a place where people have knelt and brought both the joys and the sorrows, so that when they find themselves in that place in their marriage, they may have a compass. The Pharisees are putting Jesus to the test. The word here in the Greek is peirazō. And peirazō means to test or to try. And it's used with significance when Jesus is tempted by Satan in the wilderness. Jesus goes into the wilderness, and there Satan peirazō tests him. And it's clear that Jesus is being drawn out for the sake of ridicule. It would be very unlikely that Pharisees teaching in public would have a cloudy notion about when divorce is licit or illicit. Is it lawful, teacher, for a man to divorce his wife? Drawing him out. Most likely they're referring to the prescription given by Moses in Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy it reads, "Suppose a man enters into marriage with a woman and finds something objectionable about her. And so he writes her a certificate of divorce, putting it in her hand, and sends her out of the house." Thus the real question is, what constitutes something objectionable? Maybe it's in the eyes of the beholder. What is an objectionable? What makes it lawful to send someone away? Are they a bad cook? Does someone spend too much money? Does someone ignore the children? Does someone only pay attention to themselves? Does someone commit adultery? What gives me permission, Jesus, to send someone out of my house? There is an interesting note here in Mark's gospel. The previous time this term lawful is used is when John the Baptist is telling Herod that it is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. John the Baptist says that Herod may not take Herodias as his own wife. And John the Baptist points his finger in shame and judgment. You should not have her. And shortly thereafter, his head is on a platter. And so when the Pharisees asked Jesus about what is lawful in the context of marriage and divorce, it very well might be that they are hoping that Jesus will dig his own grave, just like John the Baptist dug his own grave for them. Maybe Jesus will do the hard thing for them. Maybe his head will end up on a platter. In Mark chapter 3, verse 6, it's clear that some of the Pharisees went out and immediately conspired with the Herodians against Jesus and how to destroy him. They make a pact earlier in the Gospel of Mark. And as I mentioned earlier, it is unlikely that these teachers of the law would be cloudy or unclear about the boundaries of divorce. They are simply trying to catch Jesus out. And while they're trying to trap Jesus and catch him out, we end up with a 2,000-year history of church teaching about divorce. Jesus gives these people an answer, and then he gives them an answer to a question that they have not asked. Jesus goes to the heart of the matter. It was because your hearts were hardened. It's because of your hardness of heart that Moses wrote you a commandment. It was your hardness that Moses gave you a fire escape. It's because you lack compassion, because you're hard and you lack patience. It's because you're hard and you lack love. It's because your hearts cannot be broken open or moved. That's why Moses gave you a way out of your obligations. Jesus is saying that divorce is a pastoral response when there has been failure in the presence of the ideal. And then Jesus goes further. Jesus reaffirms God's intentions in marriage, that the man and the woman, they become one flesh. Something that has been two becomes one. God works a transformation in the midst of his creation, so that things that are formed as a covenant in God's hands are transformed and two become one. And that no person should ever seek to separate one of God's transformations. And so Jesus is giving a teaching about marriage, but he's going back farther than Moses. He's going back to Genesis. He's taking them to school. He's talking about things from the beginning. The things that were separate, that were two, are to be made one. I once heard a little parable about marriage. How one highly principled person marries another highly principled person, and they rejoice in the fullness of their shared principled idealism. Yet with time and the inevitabilities of life, these two idealists realize that it was their principles which got married, while the rest of them got left behind. And the real marriage, the true marriage, is the art of becoming one, of transformation. And it begins when these two other parts of themselves become acquainted, and they also decide to become married. And then they spend the rest of their lives actually becoming one, becoming married. And divorce or separation begins when there's a failed introduction, when the courtship of these other facets of their personalities outside of their principles, when that begins to break down. There's pain of separation, and divorce begins when there's an inability to move beyond what lives on the surface to what lives in the heart. When the journey to the heart ends, the separation begins. because of your hardness of heart, your hardness, Moses wrote you a commandment. And so, like John the Baptist, Jesus is gently pointing a finger in judgment. This holy finger is pointing to hardness, and that it is hardness of heart that turns away from forgiveness and openness and possibility. And it brings to mind for me that old saying, you know, really there is often only one question. Would you rather be right or would you rather be married? And in the past century, we have discovered that there are indeed many folks who would rather be right, or perhaps free, who would like to be free of the obligations and bonds that matrimony brings. There are individuals who would rather retain the right to be concerned with themselves, who would like to retain the right to drink too much or to take drugs. They would like to retain the right to have boyfriends or girlfriends and become one flesh with whomever, rather than respect the dignity of the marriage bed. We've discovered that there are many who hold on to the right of keeping to themselves, even within a marriage. Very often as Christians, as the church, we find that we are called to help and advocate for spouses in marriages where there's an imbalance. Perhaps where there are plenty of rights, but little recognition of duties. The hardness of heart sometimes settles upon the person who would like to both be right or have rights, as well as have the comfort of being married. When actually the first call in the midst of a struggling marriage may be to find and reevaluate how rights and duties always must walk hand in hand and go down the path together. It's very difficult for two to become one flesh if someone is insistent on maintaining a path of personal self-determination. It will be hard to both be right and be married. However, I've been encouraged through the years with what I've learned about how God shapes a life and how God shapes a human heart to receive love that is real and not imaginary. I've been encouraged to see individuals give up their need for rights or the need to be right in order to be married. Sometimes it is with the greatest heroism, with the greatest courage that will only be known by their spouse and be known by God, while they are thought a fool in the eyes of many friends and family. Yet they're not so much thought of as a fool in the presence of God's love. I've been encouraged through the years to notice that sometimes when we learn to pray together, when we learn to acknowledge our faults and brokenness, when we simply learn how to say, I'm so very sorry that I hurt you so deeply, and I didn't know that hurting you deeply would also hurt me so deeply. The mystery of God's love, I've seen it discover room enough. I've seen that love fill the space that can come between people who are married but moving in opposite directions, maintaining their positions of splendid suspended animation. I've been encouraged through the years because although the statistics may tell one side of the story, I've been blessed to see another side of the story. That often God's love is real. And those who are long practiced in the habit of being right, they can find that they too can be brokenhearted and yet also hopeful. That they can be afraid, yet also become courageous. That they can actually be angry, yet also be forgiving. I've been encouraged through the years that the mystery of God's love is larger than all of our expectations. And for some reason known to God alone, those who are living in a parallel universe can rediscover that certain words still have great power. It is in the name of God that I take you as my friend, as my companion, as my fellow journeyman, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish. To love and to cherish not until I become bored, not until I become afraid, not until I become distracted. To love and to cherish even beyond my own selfishness, until we are parted by death. This is my song about.